just after 4 o'clock and you are listening to KPFK Los Angeles 90.7 FM, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, worldwide at kpfk.org. The name of the show is Melting Pot. We are here every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. My name is Michael Barnes and I am your host for this program. And on today's program, this is a special one, one that I've been planning for a while and looking for the right time to bring it to you, and it's finally arrived at the right time. This is a tribute show to one of my favorite records, one of my favorite records of all time, and just one of the best American punk records of all time, best American rock and roll records of all time. Comes from a group that was local to these parts here in Southern California. Three guys who were raised in San Pedro, the Minutemen, and their record Double Nickels on the Dime. It's released originally in July of 1984 on SST Records, and we're going to pay tribute to this album, and we're going to play the entire album, all four sides you're going to hear in its entirety during this show. But wanted to start off with an interview that we did recently with Mike Watt of the Minutemen, talking about this album, the recording process, some of the stories behind the songs, and a few stories about the band as well. Start here, and then we'll play you the entire record throughout the rest of the show. I really hope you enjoy this one. So right now, interview with Mike Watt of the Minutemen is going to be coming up in a few moments right now on KPFK, 90.7 FM, Melting Pot, and a tribute, 30th anniversary tribute, to the Minutemen's Double Nickels on the Dime. And right now in the studio with me, it is an absolute honor and a pleasure to have Mike Watt here with us. How are you doing, Mike?
Hey, Michael. Thanks so much for having me aboard. Well worth the hell ride from Pedro.
Thank you for dealing with that, right? No, especially here in the summer. And you're here. I asked you to come in. Wanted to do this anniversary show for what's one of my favorite records of all time, and just an amazing record, Double Nickels on the Dime from the Minutemen, celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. And wanted to just chat with you about this record, putting it together, and a variety of different things associated with it. And so, again, just thank you so much for coming in.
No problem. My honor.
Could you tell me a little bit about where the band was at when they started getting their ideas together for the new record that eventually became Double Nickels on the Dime?
Yeah. I'll give you a little philosophy.
Okay, sure.
Because the albums was part of this view we had reevaluated about music after being struck by the punk experience. You understand, we come from arena rock. The first gig we went to was T-Rex. Mm-hmm. And we were 14 years old and never knew about clubs till punk. So when we saw that situation, you know, or was bathing in it,
yeah,
we decided to reevaluate everything. So we decided to split the world into two categories: gigs and flyers. And everything that was, because the gig was so profound, this idea where, yeah, I could actually be close enough where I could see the bass had bigger strings, or the cat you were talking to would be the next guy on stage. So everything else was to get people to the gig. So if you had a picture taken or did a spiel or made a record, these were all flyers to get people to the gig. So we're going to make records every 6 months to keep in people's minds. You know, it's like putting another flyer on the telephone pole. Well, here we come in the fall of 83. D. Boone's goal was like, we should be able to play anything. Just as long as they could tell it's the Minutemen.
Yeah.
So we make this album in the fall. We didn't even have a title for it. The Huskers come to town. A Husker dude from Minneapolis, Minnesota, to record something called Zen Arcade. We were blown away. We were like, man, we want to make a double album too. It was totally inspired by the Huskers. Now, they had this whole concept about a boy in a video arcade or something. We had no concept. So we made one up. So to unify this whole thing, D. Boone really didn't like Sammy Hagar calling himself the Reb Rocker. And the guy said he couldn't drive 55. So we thought, well, we'll drive 55. And while you make that safe music and drive crazy, we'll make crazy music and drive safe. And so we call it Double Nickels on the Dime. Like, we're going to go right the speed limit. Mm-hmm. That's where the band was. In a way, the band's just putting stuff out there so people be interested and want to see us do gigs. At the same time, motivated by the movement and our peers, like the Hooskers.
Yeah.
So, in a way, a little bit conscious once the accidents happened, uh-huh. but not so much premeditated from the get-go.
Okay.
Never started out as a double album.
All right. When did you guys make the decision to add the engine sounds, the car sounds on the record?
Oh, that's Carducci.
Okay.
I think he got it from us coming up with this Hagar thing about driving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not only, you know, we're going to do the speed limit, you're going to get to hear our motors. And, oh, because he kind of combined it, now I think, of it, I've never thought of it before, with the idea of the Amagama thing of everybody having their solo, instead of Corva record, song.
Uh-huh.
But that was a Minuteman idea.
Okay.
You know, some of this stuff, if you look at the credits, there's a lot of other songwriters.
Yeah.
Especially for the second batch of tunes, because we kind of ran out. Carducci even, he ends up writing Jesus of Tequila. Hank Rollins, you know, working on Mr. Ginn's pad with D. Boone. He writes Storm in My House. We're just taking Jack Brewer's cousin Joe. We didn't even know this guy. my solo song, because D. Boone said my words were too spacey, so I wanted to get more real. So I used a buddy of mine's landlady's note that said the ceiling was leaking. Don't use a shower.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We had to go outside. So when Carducci brings that, that's, I think in a way it was we felt secure enough as being Minuteman, we could bring in outside guys and still be Minuteman.
Yeah.
See, by that point, it's a high point of the band,
mm.
especially when I think of the stuff after, like Project Merge, the three-way tie.
Yeah. The record, you know, there other bands on SST had different sounds, but none of them seemed to incorporate so many different genres into their sound the way that you guys did. And there have been times over the years where I've almost, especially with this record, kind of hesitated instead of calling it what I generally do, which is, in my opinion, the greatest American punk album of all time. A lot of times I'll just call it, you know, one of the greatest American rock and roll records of all time. But at the same time, it really seems like it's important that we consider it a punk album, not because of the style, but more because of the sentiment.
Yeah, well, our belief was punk was not a style of music.
Yeah.
We think it's a state of mind. So it was empowerment. They just don't fit in, so they're trying to make their own universe. And so that was always the MO of the Minutemen. That's how we saw ourselves as part of the movement.
And thinking about that, and especially all these different kind of ideas and inspirations coming to the group and trying to express yourselves. And I think of you and D. Boone as being the principal writers. I know George also threw in quite a bit of stuff, too. How did you guys...
Actually, George's last, after Double Nickels, he doesn't write any more songs. Hmm. It's really trippy. Yeah, it was...
Did you ever ask him about that? Why that was the case?
Man, we it tripped us out. Well, we thought about Rimbaud, you know? He wrote poems for 3 years, and it was over. Some people, I think, it's like that.
Huh.
It's not laming out. It's just that's the journey they're on.
Yeah.
Other cats got to do it. You know, they die on stage playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Elvin Jones, right, had the oxygen tank up there. You know, people come into it different. They go out of it different.
Hmm.
And it was a sad thing in a way because Georgie had a voice. You know, all three of us are from working people.
Yeah.
And we all had, I think, brought to the table different perspectives. We're all firstborn in our families.
Hmm.
Yeah, trippy kind of thing. Georgie was really important, I think. And maybe a problem with Three-Way Tie for Last and Project Mersch.
Because
we lost his voice.
Actually makes sense. I mean, in thinking about coming into kind of the discography, this was the first Minutemen record that I heard and flipped out. And actually took me a while to kind of go back and listen to some other stuff and go forward from this record as well and listen to, and the stuff, everything that came after it always felt different to me.
Yeah, it did.
And
me too.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's part of it, just the way that George kind of silenced himself, and so there was almost like an element missing.
Yeah.
Huh.
I totally feel that. Because his songs are very key on Double Nickels. You know, when D. Boone made room for the bass with the trebly thing, he also, me and D. Boone didn't have to teach each other parts because we grew up playing. He'd just play something and I'd play right to him. We spent most of the time teaching things to Georgie so he could have fills. We didn't want just holding the beat. We wanted dialogue. We thought the idea, well, part of it was economy. You put these things together work, but you're also trying to make interesting conversation.
Mm.
And the drumming's got to be along.
Yeah.
So we always wanted fills and interesting patterns with the toms because they're kind of in there with the. Of course, the kick drum's the closest thing to the bass. But D. Boone really wanted to bring those two instruments up and then bring him down so he'd have a more. Our band would have an egalitarian thing. D. Boone wanted to put political ideas in the band.
In the sound.
The whole idea of the trebly sound.
How did you guys actually. Because they're. With these different sides, you know, there's a side for D, you have your side, George has a side, and then there's the final one. There's songs that you all are writing on all these sides. It's not like you just chose a side that was just the songs that primarily one of you wrote. It doesn't seem like that,
no,
that was
it
the
was
case.
A device.
So how did you guys choose who
yeah,
where
it was
the songs
a device. Okay, got the 45 songs. Ethan mixes them in one night. And Carducci says, if you want to make it for the tour, you got to get it to me quick. And I'm like, how am I going to put 45 songs? Then I thought about the dynamic of those days, vinyl. You got sides. Well, I thought I'd give each guy a side. We'll pick straws. Everybody would pick their favorite songs. Not necessarily the ones they wrote, but what they like.
Mm.
And then the ones nobody picked, that would go on side Chafe, the fourth side. Huh. So it was just a way to try to get a sequence. Because it was driven by sides.
Yeah.
You didn't have to worry about 045 songs in a way. You're talking more about 11 songs.
If I could ask you some questions about some of the particular songs.
Great.
The number one song I probably wondered about over the years is Maybe Partying Will Help. And this is one that, at least on the notes, you and Dee wrote together. I don't know which one of you wrote the lyrics, but I was just wondering if you could say a little bit more about that song, the meaning behind that song.
Well, I'll tell you right now, D. Boone never wrote one piece of music to my words. So that solved that mystery.
All right.
He just didn't. I don't know why. Huh. So if you see Watt Boone, you knew Boone wrote the words.
Okay.
And like I said, if it rhymed, Watt wasn't going to get it. It's one of D. Boone's. At the time, he's driving the company. There's Nichols Institute down in Pedro. Kind of medical clinic, and he's driving the van, the pool, vet pool, and like to Oceanside. I think they had another thing, so he's got kind of a hell ride, you know, past Pendleton and all that, and surfers.
Yeah,
and he's just got a piece of paper there, and he's, you know, I look out and you know, and now he didn't title it, of course. D. Boone and Georgie never titled the words. They just give them to me. So they're like ruminations in his head. They're observations.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the kind of words I got from D. Boone. The music, I'm feeling some kind of bootsy thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And also, man, that stuff lit Georgie up, man. He was a hi-hat man, you know? I could get him going on that. And then the toms and all that. And then have dynamic. Because the song to me seemed like, and a lot of Minutemen's this way, it's not one groove.
Yeah.
Starts, stops, this and that, and this and that.
Uh-huh.
And then getting self-critical, right? If you want to change, change yourself.
Yeah.
That was a big part of the Minutemen with ever saying that. So it wouldn't be all didactic and stuff.
Yeah.
We thought hopefully people would get that from the tunes. And that tune for sure. And that's why I picked up on it.
Yeah.
Because there's things we got to do. It's up to all of us to be a part of the thinking and come up with good ideas about it.
Yeah.
Because we all got different perspectives, and I think we can all bring something to the party.
Yeah, yeah.
Partying didn't really mean just getting wasted in that tune. It meant bringing things together. And then that thing at the end, you know, with Georgie on the tom and D. Boone going off on the lead guitar. I just wanted to hear. Sometimes I would do things, and when I set up my songs, just to see what would happen with those guys. There's one line, it's got a big cuss word in it. It's expected I'm gone.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with the song. I just wanted to hear D. Boone say that. Sometimes, you know what I mean? Sometimes my songs seem like little plays for me. And D. Boone and Georgie are my, they're my chief stars, you know, in these things. And I would like to set up things and see, because they were like, they had a natural thing about getting their personality out that I just loved.
Yeah. A couple songs that you wrote, My Heart in the Real World.
Right.
And I just wanted to read this, the lyric, at least the way the lyrics were printed out. I think for the most part, there's sometimes where D kind of adds a couple words or changes things around, and I don't know if that was something that he just did in the moment.
Some of these were so last minute.
Yeah,
I can hear the paper that he's holding. like Mike Jackson, he goes, organizing the Bosquets for murder. It's the first time he's ever read them.
Yeah.
So some of these things, especially the March 84 session.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're just trying to get these babies out there.
Okay. For this song, this is the lyrics to the song, and it, you know, it reads like a lot of the stuff you were writing at this, you know, period of time, you know, reads very poetically. And so My Heart in the Real World, written by Mike Watt, it's on this record, Double Nickels on the Dime. And so my soul collapsed into the big gilt wad. Some big thunder law forces me to eat ish. And if I was a word, could my letters number 1,000? More likely coarse and guttural one-syllable Anglo-Saxon. And then the second verse is, I'm a victim of a fact. Let's say I loved a girl, but the world was wrong, and I was made to march in line. Finally, I felt like handcuffs. Machines disregard my pronouns. I am defeated. I am the cold, damp clay. And I was wondering just what could there multiple themes that are going on in that song, and in some ways actually seems really related to maybe Partying Will Help in some respects. But I was wondering if you could shed a little light on what was going on in My Heart in the Real World.
That's my reaction to one of my reactions to Ulysses, James Joyce. Mm. It was, you know, I'm 25 at that time.
Uh-huh.
And I read this thing. I'm totally reacting to this thing. Like some people reacted to On the Road, you know, and that's my version of it.
Hmm.
And there's no topical connection except for me reading that book and getting finished with it just right before we write these tunes.
Was that kind of a similar influence with The World According to Nouns?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Almost every lyric I write on this one, except Mike Jackson. Mike Jackson, I really thought if he sang those words, people would know what the Minutemen were about.
Do you know if he ever actually heard it?
I don't know. I never got word from the management. But that one was totally designed. It was the mission, you know. Mm. A flyer right into his mailbox slot, you know. Like, hey, sing this for us, and people will know what we're about. It's just political song from Michael. It's not an ironic title.
Yeah.
It's totally
I think
it
a lot
is.
Of people might think that.
Oh,
but,
everybody
but,
does. Nobody yeah. thinks it was the real thing. When I tell them that, they're like, Are you kidding me? No, I'm not kidding you.
With the album, because you only, like, you don't, well, I guess you sing on Politics of Time, but the other tracks that feature your voice more prominently are more kind of, more spoken as opposed to sung.
Yeah, it was too hard. The bass line was too hard. I was supposed to do History Lesson Part 2.
That's what I was getting ready to ask you about.
That's why D. Boone changed it to me and Mike Watt, because it sounded kind of retarded.
Yeah.
Me and D. Boone.
Yeah.
Parvitt's pragmatic on the bass.
Okay.
But I wrote these things for these guys so they could inject their personality in them.
Okay.
You know, I thought it was really important.
So when you wrote History Lesson, you wrote it, your words, but you were kind of writing it with, you know, D is going to sing this
not,
at some
not
point.
First.
Was that the case?
First I tried, and it was like, man, this is stumble. Yeah. That song has nothing to do with Ulysses. That song has to do with maybe the hardcore kids. There started to be a big war in the Flip Side magazine between kids liking our band and another band, and who really was punk and who was real.
Yeah.
And I was trying to say, you know, we're all in this, you know. We all come from different places. Nobody picks any of this stuff, but We're supposed to be getting over those kind of things, because look at this big mean world outside there.
Yeah,
and here we're mirroring that same dynamic. So don't worry, it's you and your buddies playing, me and my buddy playing. I dreamed I was another guy playing. That's how I got into playing, you know, or got enough nerve up to do it. It was kind of like, yeah, we all got a heavy thing on us, but we all come from this place of disenfranchised. I felt punk people came from disenfranchised situations.
Yeah,
and we shared. Even though we're not born, we're not in the same town. We're sharing, in a way.
Yeah, and that right from the beginning, and it's one of the iconic lines from that song, but right from the beginning, that kind of appeal to community comes out, just with the "our band could be your life"
line. Community. That's great, Michael. That's what it was.
Yeah. But it's also such a deeply personal song, too.
It is. And because, remember, I'm not a musician. I get into music to be with my friend.
Yeah. And for me, because by the time I got introduced to the Minutemen, D-Bone was already gone, so I never had a chance to see you guys. I was like 10 years old when he died, so I don't know if I would have even been able to go to clubs in Atlanta around that time, but certainly if the band had played on, I would have had that chance. But for me, there's always a kind of sadness associated with the song now. Especially just almost there's almost kind of like a bit of nostalgia connected to it as well, because there's this reflection of where you guys started and the fact that basically it's kind of the same. It seems kind of the same to me as a listener. Like, it's always been, you and Dee Boone, just playing around in the band.
Yeah.
And that just that statement of friendship and the way it ends with, well, he changes it to, me and Mike Watt playing guitar. It almost always brings me to tears. It's just the sentiment in the song is just a really beautiful sentiment. And I always thought that the story of the friendship of the three of you, but especially you and Dee Boone, was just such a powerful and amazing story of friendship. And something that I feel like those kind of stories and that kind of closeness between people is something that that we don't hear nearly enough about. It certainly occurs between others, but it doesn't seem like it gets expressed.
Well, we thought that scene was open enough you could do that. Mm. That's how much confidence by that time, by 1983. Let the freak flag fly.
Mm.
I don't know why. There's a lot of confidence that we found through the scene that comes out in Double Nickels. We could do anything. And I'm just very grateful for Dee Boone and Georgie playing their hearts out and not being, no bummed out and just connecting the dots. Just that's a big part of it too. These guys just going for it, man. Incredible thing for me, I couldn't listen to that stuff until I did the Wee Jamaicano, because they were going to talk to me and I had to remember. I hadn't listened to it in years and years.
Yeah.
And then when I heard it, it was like, whoa. Yeah. And it all came back to me. They're all little diary entries, too, in a way.
Yeah.
Remember all the practices, all the thing getting to it. It's very personal for me. It's so interesting how people relate to it. Like you said, you were only like 10, and you can relate to it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's quite a compliment to us. I would never be the cat I am now without that band, without that experience. It's just really profound on me. So for you to share in on that, thank you so much, Michael.
Well, again, wow. I can't thank you enough just for sharing this time with us and the stories and giving a little bit of a kind of a glimpse into that very specific period of time and just the way that you've carried it with you and all the things you've done since then, and again, just sharing it with us today, I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much, Mike.
Big welcome.
Okay, so you just heard an interview that we recorded with Mike Watt here at the studios at KPFK just a little while ago, talking about the recording of this classic record, Double Nickels on the Dime. There's actually a lot more to that interview, and I've been thinking about putting up the full version, or at least a longer version of the interview, when we post this show to our website, meltingpotblog.com, which is where you'll be able to find this show, and all our other shows are archived there as well. And I'll throw up a longer version of that interview for you to hear all the stories that Mike Watt told us. We're going to start with the record now and play you, as I said, the entire Double Nickels on the Dime, all four sides, and start off with the side that was chosen by D. Boone. It carries his name, just side D, first side of music. And this is the side that on the record, the original record, in the dead wax, it says, "Arena rock is the new wave," is the message for this side. D. Boone side from Double Nickels on the Dime, which you're going to hear right now on KPFK 90.7 FM and Melting Pot, and our tribute, 30th anniversary tribute to the Minutemen's Double Nickels on the Dime.
tiger strikes like a snake. Feel like a poker in someone's fireplace. Out for history.
I am a cesspool
for all the nation
to run down in.
Because of their own
So you just heard the first side of music from Double Nickels on the Dime here on KPFK 90.7 FM and Melting Pot, special tribute show to this record on its 30th anniversary from the Minutemen. And that side was music that was chosen by the singer and guitarist Dee Boone. And all the songs, I'm going to wait until the end of the show in order to tell you all the individual songs that you hear on all these different sides. I'm really just trying to make sure that I get all this music in into the program. And thinking about that, I'm going to start off with the second side of music, this one chosen by Mike Watt. And the message on this particular side of the record says, punk rock is the new nostalgia. From the Minutemen, Double Nickels on the Dime. Here is at least first part of Mike Watt's side of music, Side Mike from Double Nickels on the Dime, here on KPFK 90.7 FM and Melting Pot.
This monitor's a riot with petition.
Our philosophy is your life worth a painting. Is this girl versus boy with different symbols? Being born is power. Scout leader, not detect this big scene. Your risk, change me hostage. Me, I'm fighting with my head. I'm not ambiguous.
I must look like a dork.
Me, naked with tech.
So dig this big crux.
Organizing the Boy Scouts for murder is wrong. 10 years beyond the big sweat point. Man, it was still there ever without you. Coming back around, look. We're coming together for just a second. A peek, a
at the homeless, it's way too big. My energy to notice life being so beautiful. Maybe partying will help. Toilet starts flushing, sets me off again. But I
So you just heard the first half of the second side of Double Nickels on the Dime here on KPFK in Melting Pot and our tribute to this classic record from the Minutemen. We have to take a little bit of a break here at the top of the hour just to play a couple messages, but we'll be right back with the second side of this album and all the other two sides, the entire record, trying to get through here on KPFK 90.7 FM in Melting Pot and our tribute to the Minutemen and their record Double Nickels on the Dime.
We'd like to thank you for showing your continued support. Because of you, we can continue bringing you world news and world music, free of commercials and corporate underwriting. And remember, you can always become a member online at kpfk.org under Pledge Support.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and online at kpfk.org. This is Pacifica Radio for Southern California and beyond.